From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1999, Fish bassist Mike Gordon went backstage and handed Leo Kottke a tape of a bass part he had composed to accompany a solo from Kottke's landmark album, 6 and 12-string Guitar. That cassette and Mike Gordon got Leo Kottke's attention. Fish was by then an improving concert sensation, with a horde of fans that followed the band around the country with the kind of devotion once given to the Grateful Dead. Leo Kottke was a famed virtuoso with dozens of albums behind him in a celebrated career. 3 years later, the jam band bassist and legendary guitarist released their first album together, Clone. Now they're out touring with their second, 66 Steps, rehearsed in Costa Rica, recorded in the Bahamas, an island-inspired mix of the two men's work, including original songs and covers of everything from Pete Seeger's Living in the Country to Errol Smith's Sweet Emotion. This hour, On Point, jamming with Mike Gordon and Leo Kottke. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in this duo? Do you come to it from a lifetime of Leo Kottke, from a road-tripping history with Mike Gordon and Fish? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio are Leo Kottke and Mike Gordon. They are now touring the country with their latest album, 66 Steps. Leo Kottke is widely recognized as one of the great fingerstyle guitarists of all time. Mike Gordon, former bassist for Fish, performed with the band for 21 years until the group disbanded in 2004 in a shower of fan adulation. We're so happy to have both of you here. Mike, Leo, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great to have you. And you've got your guitars, and you're in the studio, and we've got a lot of music from the new album. Just terrific. Mike Gordon, what was on your mind when you went backstage with that cassette in 1999? To take it to the great one, Leo Kottke.
Yeah, wow, I had been following him for a long time. I'd been following the great one since all the way through the 80s.
Maharishi Kottke.
My legendary friend. With Leo, for me, it's all, I don't know why, but it's all epiphanies. I have epiphanies that help me make decisions. I wish the rest of my life could be run like that. I was driving and heard one of his songs, after being very familiar with his stuff, but this one moment just struck me like lightning. Mm. I've got to try to contact this guy. Where is this guy? Bring me to him.
and you were composing in your mind at the same time something that would work along with Leo Kottke's work.
Maybe subconsciously. I mean, I knew that it was going to be something that wasn't a standard bass line. I knew that I was going to be a little twisted, and then I bought the album and started putting something to it. But then when I had the gall to give him the tape, and
yes,
I also gave him some other stuff, a little care package. I gave him the book that I had written and a couple other things. And then I didn't hear from him for several months. But then, I figured he thought it was the cheesiest thing anyone had ever done. And after a few months, I got a call, and he said, "It's Leo. That tape you gave me, that was the cheesiest thing that anyone had ever done.
Let's play."
Yeah, let's play.
Leo Kottke, what did you make of this? You've been out there since the 60s and doing it in the most celebrated way. And here's a guy from Fish. Did you know what Fish was?
I really didn't. I knew that I knew the band existed, but I'm a very isolated character. Guitar sounds good if you drop it on the floor, and I spend all my time just noodling around. Yeah. The cheesiest thing about what Mike did is this tune that he picked.
Why?
It's a cheesy tune. I wrote it, and I've been trying to distance myself from it ever since. But there was also a book, Mike's Corner, which is, I believe, still available, and a word, eleemosynary. I had never seen that word anywhere else.
Eleemosynary, what does that mean?
It's an adjective used to describe someone given to supporting charitable causes.
I see, of course. I should have known. And the track off of 6 and 12-string Guitar that he chose, that cheesy track of yours?
Yeah, Driving of the Year Nail. It was not cheesy then, but, things become cheese over time, or they tend to uncheese. That too can happen, although not as often.
You have not played much in this kind of arrangement with others in your career. What was it about what he was offering you, including his, was it eleemosynarian attitude, that drew you to actually sit down and play with him?
Well, the tape demonstrated, it's kind of too bad that we don't have that here. The tape demonstrated that Mike had a different approach to the bass. And when I play with other instruments, I being such, you know, so stuck in a solo mode, I kind of get in everybody's way. And that, and I've always thought that somebody approached the bass either like a horn or in some other way wouldn't be so bothered by the fact that I'm hogging the twos and the fours and the roots.
Right,
and,
right.
And there's this amazing thing that he did on there, all of it was. And it, so I thought, man, I ought to try this.
And so A Duo's born now on its second album, 66 Steps. I mean, both of you playing solo, obviously, as well. But clearly a kind of affection, attraction struck here. We've got you in the studio with guitars, and we'll hear them in a minute. I want to have a lot of music in this hour. In these times, we can use it. And maybe a piece off the new album to start with. Lou Kocke, you've got one on here, Balloon. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, this was floating around with nothing but the first verse for probably a couple of years, until actually more than that, until Mike and I were rehearsing. It was a very difficult rehearsal space in Costa Rica.
A difficult rehearsal space, but this is Mike's dad's pad.
That's right. It was too splendid.
Mike's dad, founder of Store 24, so probably no mean pad in Costa Rica.
It was a pretty good pad, but the humidity was thick.
Yeah, we read about how tough it was. The infinite pool and the Costa Rican raccoons raiding the fridge. We've heard some of the stories. Let's hear a little bit of Balloon from the new album from Leo Kocke and Mike Gordon, 66 Steps.
When your brother and his raisin jack blow up in the yard and the elephants refuse to honk just to break your heart. Balloon, balloon, balloon. When your friends tell you you're
Leo Kocke singing there along with Mike Gordon from their new album 66 Step, a track called Balloon. Now, Leo, Mike, I've got to say, you guys, in my experience, there's a generation spanning, obviously, here. But Leo Kocke, I remember listening to you like crazy in the 70s when you were first breaking all over the place. Everybody was amazed with that finger-picking style of yours, the speed, the complexity, the passion in it. And then years later, Mike Gordon, I turn around, and every kid I know is got is a fishophile, and half of them are tromping around your group. All over the country, you had such an impassioned following. It was just incredible. Apart from the music, culturally, do you feel like from, you know, two different poles of generations or not, Leo?
Speaking for myself, no, not at all. I don't think that kind of thing exists.
Generation schmineration.
Yeah, I don't. It just never has made much sense to me, but. And one of the proofs of it, or one of the arguments I have for it, it would be music. Because music is, it might turn to cheese over time, then it disappears. But music, it's all in the same place at the same time. And nothing, you know, it's a constant. It's almost an absolute, the way music hits us.
Is there anything in Mike Gordon that you can feel as of from another kind of starting point? I mean, the cultural references change over time.
No, it's what I get. Is this instant, although the first time we tried it was instant flop. After about a day, we hit a spot where it clicked, and it's that click. It's the click, and that click, I'm positive, is the same for everybody.
And Mike Gordon, how about you? You'd spent years improvising with your fellow band members in Fish, and I'm sure many other people. Now you're clicking in to Leo Kocke. Did it feel like, you know, this is some kind of old original here? This is the touch of the relic, the old main line. I don't know.
Back to the great one?
the great one.
A touch of the great.
The radiance of the great one.
I probably was listening to Leo before I met the guys in Fish, and after we were in college and we had just met each other after 3 weeks of getting to UVM as a freshman.
University of Rock, when the group first came together in the early 80s.
Yeah. Yep. We met 3 weeks after we all got to school there. And a few weeks after that, we all went down to see Leo play. So that was right at the beginning, in a sense. It makes this not so much of a departure for me. And plus, what he was saying about that click thing when it happens, it doesn't necessarily... It's all about probably being open to whatever situation you're in. Mm-hmm. So if you're banging on some cars in a parking lot, then that has to click too. You know, it doesn't matter. So whether you're in a big, you know, playing for 80,000 people with screaming guitar notes and that kind of thing, or playing unamplified in a tiny room with acoustic guitars, you know, if you're open to what's going on, and what if what's going on is other people or the other person, then you know, you're inviting the magic to sometimes come, the muse, you know. So it feels the same in a sense. He's right.
That sounds like Fish talking, and Mike Gordon and Leo Kottke, both with us today. The microphones are set up. They've got their famous guitars in their laps. They're ready to go. The great one, Mike Gordon, is here. You can join the conversation to Leo Kottke. Do you come to this duo from the 70s and memories of Leo Kottke as a kid, or the 90s and memories of Fish and Mike Gordon? What do you hear when you put the two together? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be right back and hear them live. Here we'll go out with Leo Kottke and his 1972 live version of Busted Bicycle, guitar solo from 6 and 12 string guitar, also known as the Armadillo album, after the animal on the cover. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with legendary guitarist Leo Kottke and Fish bassist Mike Gordon about the music life and their new album, 66 Steps. You can join us. What do you hear when you hear these two guitar men together? And we'll hear them live in just a moment. What do you think? Is the guitar still God in American popular music, or is it the mixing board now? And do Kottke and Gordon put it back on the pedestal for you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Some of you may have been listening to Leo Kottke for a long time. Some of you may know, be most hooked into this from the Fish side. Let's get a sense of that. This is Fish, the band Mike Gordon helped put into such fame, starting in the 80s, really became huge in the 90s. Here they are performing live with their tune bouncing around the room, and you can hear just how beloved they were on tour. Performing live there, bouncing around the room, and you can hear the adoring fans who followed them became their kind of trademark beyond the music. Fish bassist Mike Gordon is with us, along with guitar legend Leo Kottke. They're going to be playing for us in just a moment here, but let me ask you, Mike, first, you've got a couple of years on it now, maybe just one since you last performed, but what was that about? That roar of adulation we heard from that crowd, you don't have decades of perspective on it, but a full year and more now. What was the Fish sensation?
Wow, you know, the adulation is something you have to get not caught up in order to really release yourself while playing on a stage like that. And, you know, because so much of what we did was improvisation, mm-hmm. going with the flow, no set lists, and, you know, no knowing how the song is going to turn out. And so we were just, well, what it was incredibly lucky that we had such great fans, and that we had such a commitment to each other, that we spent all the years sort of evolving and growing with all those people that would listen to us play some pretty strange music. But like I was saying, you have to walk out onto a stage like that, and you can enjoy the togetherness and the energy, but you can't start saying, "Oh, I am a rock god," even a second, or the music will suffer.
Of course, it's been done many times.
Oh, I know,
and we can't help but listen to that and hear the wah!
Right.
You know, it is quite something. Leo Kottke, when you got to know Mike Gordon and listened into that music, what did you hear in this bassist that was unique to Mike?
There's the tone and the kind of invention that Mike does is unique to my ear on this instrument. It's his own, and that's something I think maybe every musician hopes for, is to find your own voice or your own sound. But if you're trying for it, it's not going to happen. I think it's related directly to why you picked up the instrument in the first place. And I know for Mike, it had to do with the way a bass guitar in the Bahamas was vibrating in a whole swimming pool that he was floating in.
That's true.
That sounds rough.
That's the thing, you know, it's where it starts and why it starts. There are a lot of great players who aren't on the right instrument because they weren't in the swimming pool at the right time.
One can only imagine the number.
Yeah.
And what about that fish thing that floated on Mike's bass line? When you listen to that now, Leo, what do you hear? You heard the fans, they loved it. What does Leo Kottke think of it, looking back on it?
Well, I was at the reunion concert at Madison Square Garden where I realized why they have that entire place on shock absorbers. The Madison Square Garden was bouncing up and down in time to the music. It was, of course, always late.
try playing through that.
Yeah, and there is something about that I know nothing about that I can really feel is how as a unit this band responded to challenges and phenomena that just don't happen if you're by yourself on a stage. But the thing that really sticks out for me from the beginning, now that I know a little more about Fish, is how they include the crowd. They'll walk right out into the crowd before or after they're playing. Mike scares me to death because he just wanders right in there.
Soar over it, walk into it.
Yeah, and you can't be any kind of a... You can't be anything but yourself when that happens, and whether or not it has anything to do with why... Actually, it has nothing to do with why Mike goes out there, but it makes a big difference if you're a listener, especially if you're a band like Fish, which at the point that they disbanded was the largest ticket-selling band on earth.
An enormous phenom. Guitar virtuoso, the great one, Leo Kottke, with us today, and former Fish bassist Mike Gordon. We've been salivating over those guitars in your laps for long enough. We'd really love to hear something from you. What can you play for us today?
I think we're going to play a tune called William Powell. And for me, I mean, this is a tune that I had written. It's one of the things that we first worked on. But for me, this is that's the fun of it, playing together, is that it sounds more like itself with Mike than it does without Mike.
Well, listen for that. Thank you. Leo Kottke and Mike Gordon live in the On Point studio, and what a sound. Just fantastic. We've got an awful lot of listeners who want to talk with you, too. It's a rare opportunity to hear you playing live. The new album is 66 Tips. This is not on it, but we heard it here first, folks, and there are plenty of great tracks. We'll talk about them. Let's take a call. Brad's calling from Pocatello, Idaho. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Hey. What do you think?
I think it's wonderful. It's just amazing to hear these two guys play together.
Isn't it? No kidding.
And I haven't picked up the record yet, but will do so. And have been a Fish fan for many, many years and a Leo fan for many years. And I just wanted to ask if Leo has the same penchant for the absurd as Mike.
The great one? He's the original absurdist. Leo Kottke, the penchant for the absurd?
Oh yeah, it's not a penchant. It's a
way of life.
Yeah, well, and it is for all of us. I mean, it's a fact.
Yeah, I've only scratched the surface. It turns out.
he's the great one of absurd observations as well. Brad, where have you seen it in Mike Gordon?
Oh, his the recent album Inside In that Mike did was just wonderful. Exploratory. Absurdness and great music and interesting lyrics. And I also wanted to ask Mike, how was it approaching the bass? I understand Mike went back from a thumping style bass and finger picking to a pick bass, and I guess Phil Esch was instrumental in that, and you wanna like to hear some comment on that if you could.
Mike?
Yeah, I just really like the sound of the pick, especially when we were playing in the big rooms. I don't really like bass when you can't hear it. And some people get great finger sounds, but in the bigger, you know, rooms, you can't hear it. And it's a whole different groove with the pick. And it might make me sound a little bit like another guitar player when I'm playing with Leo. Some people say it. An old friend of mine came down and saw us and said, oh, you're playing a guitaristic style. And at one point in my career, I just switched. I just kind of like the sound. Yeah, I like Phil's stuff and some other people who play with the pick. So.
Brad, it's wonderful to have your call from Pocatello, Idaho. Thanks for being with us. Let's get another call. Keith is calling from Lowell, Massachusetts. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. What do you say? What do you think?
Pleasure. This question kind of picks up on the last caller's question. Fish is just such a beautifully theatrical band in their music and their orchestration, also in their stage shows. I wonder if being sort of now on the solo or the duo requires more of a focus, or really how does it require more of a focus, and also if Mr. Kottke tends to get more expansive or theatrical during the performances or during the sessions.
You should see the spandex pants and high-heeled boots he's wearing right now. No, I am kidding. But it's a great question. Mike, first to you.
Yeah, we almost took these two tiny gourds and put them right in front of where we stand, and that was going to be our big stage show.
But, two gourds and a jack-o'-lantern.
You know what's great, though, is that it's back to basics. And now we're not using any amplification on stage. We amplify it for the sound system. But and the result, and we're standing right next to each other, so what we can do is we can have the same kind of jam that we have in a living room or a hotel room and take that to the stage, you know, without mucking it up with all of this electronics. And it's really great in that way. It's back to basics.
Leo Kottke, how about it? Can you imagine ever doing it any other way? I mean, that's your stock and trade. You're the original coffee house guy.
I have kind of a spandex head, actually, and I've relied on it since I can't remember when. And it's sort of like Miles Davis said, the reason that his music was good is that he couldn't remember what he did. And you find out, I think, in performance, not elsewhere, that you just leave your head where it was when you walk on. You're not there when you're up there. And so... That's what works for me, and I think it's what everybody's doing. They all have different handles, but it's the same thing.
We had a question about Mike's finger picking style. Leo Kottke, yours, of course, is just famous. You're on a 16-string guitar today, but a 12-string you've often used, sometimes of your own design. We'll have people who know guitar plucking inside and out and others who won't. Can you describe your fingering style?
Well, the problem if you're playing with your right hand, if you're playing stuff like that is this. you need to find some way to make the thumb a finger.
Yes.
But continue using the advantage of its opposedness.
Of its leverage and its opposedness. Right.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, I think. And
when you do it, is it all floating, or how are you managing that?
It from opposition. First, you steal licks off of records and try and figure out what people did. When you hear a bit of stuff where the hand is unsegmented. But after a while, you begin to absorb it, and you don't think about it anymore. So for me, when I'm playing, I don't notice that the thumb is now a finger. If you do think about it, or if you do start to notice, then you'll be in big trouble.
But is making the thumb a finger, as you put it, is that what makes it the finger-plucking style? Is that what defines your sort of general approach here?
Well, I couldn't define it, and neither could my hand, but maybe it does, but... to answer the question, it's about the only thing that I could come up with that serves the question.
Yeah. Mike Gordon, when you listen to Leo Kottke play, I mean, people have just been blown away, amazed forever now by what he does. How do you see it as a bassist?
Yeah, and also after 5 years, I'm continually surprised by things that come out of those thumb as fingers, as thumb combos. And, you know, I think that's actually, while you were both talking about that, that's a good point, that the low end that's going on there is very surprising. And that's what you often don't get in someone playing fingerstyle guitar, where it gets to be very predictable, usually. And the low end kind of dances around. It's remarkable that I can fit that the bass that I play and that his bass lines end up fitting in the way that they click. But it's clear from lowest note to highest note, and it's constantly surprising and sometimes improvising all the way down to that thumb bass note and all the way up to the melody notes. And I can't entirely figure it out. I get a couple guitar lessons on the road from time to time, but I haven't cracked the code, if that's what we were hoping for.
The clarity is just amazing. We've got to take a short break here. We're talking with legendary guitarist Leo Kottke and Phish bassist Mike Gordon. You can join us. What do you hear in these tracks? Do they put you back on the road with Phish, back in the coffee house with Kottke, or down in Costa Rica in the Bahamas, right here, right now? 1-800-423-8255 is our number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll go out with their version of Ya Mar, a staple at Phish live shows. Now, Leo Kottke and Mike Gordon have it on their new album, 66 Steps. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with guitar legend Leo Kottke and Phish bassist Mike Gordon about their new CD, 66 Steps. Here's Leo Kottke on vocals with Fleetwood Mac's Oh Well.
I'm in, can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. Don't ask me what I think of you, might not give the answer that you want me to.
Leo Kottke's distinctive voice there on their Mike Gordon, Leo Kottke cover of Fleetwood Mac's Oh Well. Their new album is 66 Steps. It's got a kind of island flavor, some composing and rehearsing going on in Costa Rica, recording in the Bahamas, and you can hear these two great guitarists having a lot of fun right there. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Bill is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're great. What do you hear, Bill?
Well, I've heard Kottke since the early 70s, and I almost wanted to quit playing guitar as soon as I first heard him. But
you and a lot of others, a million.
Yeah, I know. But instead, I said, well, okay, he can do that, and nobody else on earth can. Right. And I've seen him, Leo, live several times, and I would pay money to see him if he never picked up a guitar, because he's the funniest guy I've ever seen in my life, and he never cracks a smile and never tells a joke.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic. Anyway, I had heard through the grapevine that Leo had to quit playing for a certain amount of time because of tendonitis and right-hand picking issues. Is this a vile, scoundrelous rumor, or is this true? And can you talk about how you recovered from that?
Bill, thanks. Leo?
Yeah. No, that is true. When I started out, I saw a picture of Lester Flatt with a thumb pick, so I thought I needed a thumb pick. Mm-hmm. I got the thumb pick, got interested in the banjo, put on some finger picks, and fell into that mode of playing, and then later on it destroyed my right hand. My position got contorted, and I was out of whack. I didn't know that until I was playing one night in Denver, and the way I experienced it, tendonitis is different for everybody. The way I experienced it was that every time I would try to play, my hand and my arm would freeze. It was like playing with a big zucchini instead of, you know, five fingers and an arm. It took about 3 years. The only thing I could do, because there really isn't any treatment for it, was to lose the finger picks, and I finally lost the thumb pick in a concert in Melbourne in front of 3,000 people and walked off with a disaster on my hands.
It just literally fell out of your hands, and you had the zucchini.
No, I threw it. I threw it off. I was left with the zucchini, but now I don't even have the thumb pick, and I had a blister and a disaster at the end of that. But after 3 years, it all straightened out, and in the long run, it's been really good for me.
So without the pick, you've got a different position that doesn't do that damage to your hand and arm.
Yeah. I'm much more relaxed. The force comes from your feet up through your. You play with your whole body. Your posture is important. And that all comes naturally if your position is relaxed to begin with. It's sort of like holding a baseball loosely.
Bill, in Nashville, you sound like you're a guitarist. Have you heard that evolution in Leo's playing as he's had to adapt there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's much less clacky. I mean, I loved 6 and 12 string, you know, when I first heard it. Mm-hmm. Never heard anything like it before, but recent years, it's much less, dare I say, clacky. I mean, I can't hear the finger picks and the thumb picks, so there's no metal hitting the metal. It's flesh hitting the metal.
Thanks.
It seems a lot more accurate.
Leo says thanks. Leo, do you miss that at all? The old thwack and
no. There is one thing that you can do with finger picks that you can't do with your fingers, and that's overplay. And there are a couple tunes where it would be fun to overplay, but that's never really good for you. And the people who do use picks and do it well never overplay, so they're just dangerous for me. So very little that I miss about them.
He's gone from the pick. It's such a treat to have the two of you with us. Really a privilege. We'd love to hear something more if you've got something more you're prepared to put your fingers to work on.
Yeah. We were thinking of doing this one thing, but I've had so much coffee, which I don't drink.
Uh-oh.
I did an interview with Jane Pauley once on the and I didn't drink coffee then either.
Yeah.
And it was about 4 a.m. on the Today Show, and I
a little logie. Oh, you had some.
Oh, man.
Over the moon.
It's just terrible. So if Mike doesn't mind, maybe we can just, we're going to flounder along on a tune that John Fahey wrote called Steam Engine. Thank you.
Leo Kottke and Mike Gordon, live in the On Point studio with John Fahey's Steam Engine. Is that what we've got there,
yeah.
Leo? And I think John Fahey would be more than proud to hear it played just that way. Gosh, that is just fantastic. We're so just thrilled to have you with us. You know, so many questions come up as you play. You were sort of trading the foreground there. I mean, the bass is really up, and then Leo, you'll be up. Is someone leading and someone following in some dimension at different points, or are you always kind of simulcasting? You know what I mean? Is there a leader-follower element depending who's got the forefront of the piece or not?
You know, not to jump in, and not to speak in fish speak again, but for me, the best parts of the songs are when there's no thinking, but when I'm... If anything, I'm listening to him, and I don't even hear myself. The fingers become... Mm-hmm. An extension of
the ear.
Of the ear and of the subconscious, which mm-hmm. is listening to Leo. And so it's kind of like the Ouija board, you know, theory, where it plays itself.
What about when you took the foreground there for a long stretch?
We had a couple. There are parts that are more like solos a little bit. But even within the solo, that can happen where a couple notes will be inspired by subconsciously.
Yeah.
It sounds pretentious to talk about it, but by a couple notes that he plays, you know.
Leo, how about for you? There's a dance in the duo.
Exactly,
is somebody leading or not?
No. What Mike's saying is mm-hmm. is exactly it. You, when it's going the way it wants to go, when it's really working the way you know it can, I'm playing the bass and Mike's playing the guitar. It's a literal fact when it's really hooked up right.
Swapping back and forth, you're inhabiting
each other. You really aren't playing your own instrument, you're playing the other guy's instrument. I've experienced it only once before years ago in the studio with a keyboard player, and it was a shock then, and I hadn't been able to find it until Mike and I bumped into
So you're so deep in their shoes in a way, and just letting yourself respond spontaneously.
Just surrender. I mean, for example, let's say the next chord change is going to come. We're here, and we're going to go to here. Mm-hmm. Something as simple as that.
Yeah.
Now, I can be thinking, what should I do on that four chord? Should I play it like is already built into his pattern, or should I play it like a someone would be playing a jug bass? Would that be cool? Any of this thinking is not the way to go. And if I can find this blankness, if I can say, well, I'm not going to think about that, I'm not going to think about anything, it's just going to come, then something cool might happen.
Let go of that thinking. Josh is calling from Nashville. Hi, Josh. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call.
Great to have you. What do you think, Josh? What do you hear?
Well, a couple things. Another musician from Nashville. The first time I saw Fish was my senior year in high school in 91 in a room with about 150 people, Mike.
Wow.
And that was about the same time I got Leo's 6 and 12 string guitar. So the world's coalesced.
The hooks were in, and they still are, as I bet.
Absolutely. And I guess my question's going to lean towards, additionally, I saw Mike sitting next to you at the Station Inn, seeing another great acoustic duo, Gillian Welch and David Rollins, a couple months ago.
But, great crew.
Yeah, you're right next to me, but I gave you your privacy, and it was good to see you there checking them out. My question leans more towards... You guys obviously are so in tune musically and are getting more so as you continue to play together. But you guys also seem to be very intellectually in tune as well. Thematically or conceptually, when you guys approach writing music or putting a project together, getting a body of work together, do you guys go in with a particular theme in mind? And secondly, if there is any type of concept that you guys approach with the development of digital music and song-by-song downloading on the Internet, do you guys see a place in the future of music to have conceptual pieces that have a body of work or a full album worth of a concept, and do you think that the public still wants to receive music that way?
Yeah, everybody's asking, Josh. Leo Kottke?
Well, I don't really think that way. I mean, toward the end of that sentence there, I've noticed that some of the happiest stuff for Mike and I just happens when we're poking around. There is a little bit of premeditation that's necessary, especially if there's a recording coming up. But it isn't really that you design anything or determine what it's going to be before you get there. There's a lot that you depend on that has to do with luck, intuition, and disaster. Sometimes the best things that can happen are when everything falls apart.
And what about the business, Leo, and the way it it sits out there waiting for your stuff to flow into it? Is it as open and welcoming as it ever was, or is it changing?
I've been, just me, myself, and me, I've been the luckiest character for the last 30 years because I've never had any interference or hassles from the company that I record for. And that is unusual, I think, but it's becoming more usual. On the other hand, the industry is utterly changed, and I can't even speak to that. I just know that it is. It still allows me to go out and play, and it's still, you know, it's amazing, really, that the label this record is on was happy for now two records to have Mike and I doing something together.
And that label is, remind us,
RCA BMG.
Right. Mike Gordon, Josh was good enough not to tap you on the shoulder
right.
at the Gillian Welch concert, I guess, in Nashville, wasn't it?
Right.
That?
Which was great,
but,
as usual,
you know,
for them.
Yeah, I was there, too.
Love for, both of you.
I was just listening.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing to do. But what about Josh's question? He puts it earnestly here, Mike, on theme and composition.
You know, the more that... I think if you work at any craft, actually, you discover more possibilities the more you do it. Something gets opened up. And so with Leo and I, that's probably why we made a second album, is because the first album just showed us the potential. And in the first album, we were grabbing pots and pans from the kitchen. So the second album, we ended up getting a real percussion player, and it just sort of flowed. And but now that we've done a couple and all this playing, I just keep thinking of more ideas of what we could do, and segueing to his second part of his question about live downloads or downloading single tunes and all that. I mean, I don't think that, you know, being afraid of technology, like at first the record companies were and the bands were, I don't think that that makes sense, because there is the technology, and it's, you know, it's evolving, and it's not necessarily unhealthy. And if we sort of evolve with it, I mean, you know, Leo and I could... We could take one lick and make a whole album out of it, and, you know, and with the record company's permission, release it online and, you know, stream it in some weird way. Maybe it would come out when you're at a fast food place and you've driven up and there's that little speaker, and places like that, it would just keep coming out. You couldn't avoid it wherever you go.
It's in the air. It's everywhere. Josh in Nashville, thanks for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I guess I got to ask Leo Kutke about this guitar question. We put it to listeners earlier. They didn't buy it, but what about you? I mean, guitar was God in the 70s when you were coming up. Now mixing board is all over the place. Do you feel demoted?
Oh, no. what Mike has said, I agree completely with what Mike's saying. If you reject the tools that are available, I mean, if that's how people did things, we wouldn't have the wheel. And we need the wheel. The whatever it is that informs or fills out what happens when you're using these tools is still and always will be a mystery. And I don't think anything can stifle it.
And Mike, we've just got half a minute here, but as the electronic stuff rises, does this kind of mastery go away, or always going to be there?
That's the other thing, is the passion of the actual instrument and the actual playing and the song can't go away. You can't hurt that.
It's really an honor and a pleasure to have both of you with us, Leo Kutke and Mike Gordon. It's been wonderful to spend an hour with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Leo Kutke and Mike Gordon, their new album is 66 Steps. You can hear Leo Kutke and Mike Gordon with their cover of Aerosmith's Sweet Emotion and other music from the new CD at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll go out with Leo's From Spink to Correctionville. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.